Welcome to Leading the Next Generation with Tim Elmore. I am your co-host, Andrew McPeak, and our mission here at Growing Leaders is to empower the emerging generations with skills to lead in real life. Now, Tim, we have a really important subject today, which is all about getting things done, but in particular, getting things done at home, which is a challenge.
Absolutely. In fact, Andrew, you know this. This is all what we're going through right now during this pandemic season. But really, it wasn't limited to March and April and May. It's something I think we faced all of our lives. Most people listening, I would guess, have had this experience. You go through your whole week, Monday through Friday. You've worked hard, but all you're doing is treading water in terms of getting things done that you really feel like you need to get done. You get to the weekend and you think, oh, this is going to be great. I got Saturday and Sunday, no agenda, here we go. And you go through Saturday and, well, it didn't get done. So you go, well, at least I got Sunday. You go through Sunday and you get to Sunday night and you go, doggone it, I didn't get anything done. Or I got very few things done that I planned to get done. And here I am again, not productive like I thought I would be.
Yeah, it has happened to all of us. It takes a matter of self-discipline, but it also is about circumstances, right? You have ideas about the way your Saturday is going to happen, and then things happen that are out of your control, and all of a sudden you find that you just didn't get as much done as you wanted to.
Yeah, in fact, the out of control thing is one of my big issues. Andrew, you and I have talked about this, but we haven't done it publicly. So last fall, I had an experience where I looked at my calendar and I thought, oh my gosh, I've got an open block of time here on this day. This is fantastic. And by the time I got to that time period, several things had filled it up because several one of our team members at Growing Leaders had access to my calendar. That's enough to give you the heebie-jeebies. And so, you know, JT, Tyler, whoever, you know, all of a sudden I got four or five meetings in a time period that I had planned to use differently.
Yeah.
So those kinds of interruptions are just, nobody did anything wrong. It just wasn't what I was expecting. And as you know, conflict expands between when you have space between reality and expectations. And
yes,
that was my problem.
Yeah. And all of this we're talking about as a problem before COVID-19 and self-quarantining and isolation and all of those kinds of things. And this is what's been so interesting. And I know you've experienced this too. The first thing that happened when we went into isolation and quarantine was I thought, oh my gosh, I just got so much time back, right?
Yeah.
But within a week or two, we found ourselves back in the exact same scenario. It was a little bit of a good news and bad news scenario. And it's actually led me, I don't know if you would word it the same way, but it's led me to have to play defense with my calendar rather than playing offense, you know, fighting away meetings that I think may be a waste of time or whatever. And it just feels like it's hard to get a hold of your calendar. And here's the big issue. I think there's a lot of young people out there, especially, who now no longer have as many adults in their life who are helping them manage their time and utilize their time in a good way because of this quarantine situation that we're in. It's a whole nother aspect to this very, very real problem.
Yeah. So I think you hit the nail on the head, Andrew, when you said you start playing defense. I think most of us approach our calendars either as an offensive player or a defensive player. If I'm playing defense, I'm really just reacting to all the stuff that's coming at me. Mm. If I'm playing offense, I'm proactively looking at that calendar and I'm saying, I will boss my calendar, not let my calendar boss me. So listeners, I guess I'd just like to ask you the question, are you bossing your calendar or is your calendar bossing you?
Mm.
And then, Andrew, I'll just take it a step further. You and I talked recently, kind of off the recording, about the different ways we use our time. And if you don't mind, I'd love to jump in
real quick.
I would love
for you to share that.
Listeners, consider this. You can use your time three different ways. And really, I think there's a place for all three, but one is so much more productive than the other two. So first of all, we can spend time. We use that term all the time. We spend time. An example of spending time would be you got to get your chores done, like your laundry or taking the trash out or getting the lawn done. It's just chores that need to get done. They're kind of like maintenance. They do need to get done, but it doesn't make you feel like you catapulted forward, 90 yards. The next one is wasting time. And again, we've all used that term over this pandemic period of time.
Yes.
An example here would be just where we just find ourselves vegging in front of the TV, killing time and amusing ourselves. Now, there is a place for that. I think we all need to just let our brains relax once in a while and just veg.
Yes,
but wasting downtime. Time. Yeah, the downtime. That's right. It's a much better word. But if we were honest with ourselves, we might look at a typical 24-hour period, take away the sleep time, but we got 16 hours that we might have wasted way too much of our waking hours. And that's where the third one comes in, investing time. I would love to talk today in the few minutes we have about how do we better invest our time. Examples of this would be when we leverage time to make life better for ourselves or for others. Mm-hmm. We're doing something that actually multiplies us or our talent or our money. We even talk about money being invested. I think you can do the same thing with time where it actually produces a result at the end far beyond just maintenance.
I love that. I love that. Spending, wasting, and investing. And if we had that in our minds as we were thinking about our time, planning out our schedule for the week, or even just thinking about our day, how do I want to spend the last 2 hours of my workday or the rest of my evening or whatever, it might totally change the way that we experience the time and how we use it. So I love that insight. I love that insight. You actually have, you know, it's actually the title of this podcast, but you have 10 ideas about how we can actually invest our time, particularly the advice that we can give to the young people that we're leading. I know a lot of us are leading remotely, these young people that are in our charge, and we want to give them really good advice. How do they get more done at home in a way that's an investment rather than just wasting?
Yeah, so this is a top 10 list. And Andrew, let's you and I both just concede publicly here. We realize over the decades and centuries, there have been many people that have offered their insights on how to better, you know, use time. But this top 10 list, I think, might be just a fresh one for us, particularly in this period of time where it's far too easy to let our calendar boss us. And at the end of the day, we didn't get things done. So I'd love to jump in, and Andrew, just have you volley back if you will.
Perfect.
Okay. Number one, the first one I don't think gets talked about as much as it ought to be. I think we should use our imagination to motivate ourselves and our kids. Use your imagination to motivate yourself and your kids.
Ooh, I like this.
So here's how your imagination plays a role in time management. Author Poe Bronson wrote a great book called Nurture Shock a number of years ago. It's all research-based. But he reminds us in that book of an experiment that was done with preschool-age children. So these are young kids. These kids were asked to see how long they could stand still beside a wall in the classroom. And most of them, as you can imagine, lasted for only a few seconds. These are 3 and 4-year-old kids. Then those same students were asked to imagine that they were guards in front of a castle, guarding it from the enemies. And they needed to be very, very still in order to guard that wall well. Well, those same kids that only could stand still for 3 or 4 seconds were able to stand absolutely still for over a minute, and some of much longer than a minute.
Wow.
Why is this? I think the reason is why is our minds and our imagination are so powerful that they enable us to do what we normally could not do.
Yes, yeah.
Psychologists have said for years, our minds do not know the difference between a real experience and an imagined experience. And all they mean by that is it's not that we don't know the difference, it's just that both are equally powerful. When we see something or we imagine something, it's equally powerful to our human brain. So why not leverage that when you're using time? So what if we learn to paint pictures and leverage their effects on our capabilities? What if you offered a scenario that is an aspiration of your young person that's in front of you and got vividly specific and clear with it? And then, given that scenario, discuss what steps should be taken to make it a reality. Mm. I'll give you an example. Last year, I was teaching student leaders. A principal, actually, it was a GSLT kids, and you know them, Andrew, very, very well. They are sharp high school students. But I was sharing a principal, and I could tell at the moment it was just a theory. You know, they're writing down notes, but it's all just, you know, they're just writing
May
notes.
May use this one day or whatever.
Yeah, that's right. One day. Yeah. Hypothetical at best. So I gave them a very relevant scenario that I asked them to imagine. And I knew that many of them are going to be facing on their campus. Well, suddenly the questions started coming out, the discussion started taking off, and the planning took off as well. And it was because their imagination was engaged in their time.
I love that. I love that. You know, when in our curriculum design, one of the things that we've started to apply more and more are scenarios, right? Because one of the challenges is exactly what you said. When you're leading a young person, sometimes it's hard for them to understand exactly the way that they should, how they should process what you're trying to teach them or how they're trying to spend their time. When you give them a scenario, and especially use emotional language, here's what I want you to imagine. Imagine you're the leader of a company, or imagine you're leading a group of people who really, really disagree with one another. Those are the kinds of moments, those kinds of imaginary scenarios that then make the learning part of what you're trying to get them to understand sort of start to come alive.
Yeah, it's really why we use imagery, Andrew, with Habitudes.
Yes.
And it's taken off so much. I think people are realizing this is a visual generation we have in front of us. And if we can't literally show them a picture, we need to paint a picture in their minds. And that's what I think is key to doing our time well.
That's great. I love that. All right. So that was number one.
Yep.
Let's go to number two.
Number two, plan to bundle similar tasks together. Now, many of you probably listening do this, but I try to make this a rule, and I have for years, especially during these weeks of social isolation. Note that there's going to likely be exceptions to the rule, but I like to make it a rule. So you're going to want to come up with your own categories as you review these tasks with yourself and maybe the kids in front of you. But my tasks fall basically into three categories, okay? Creative tasks,
okay.
Administrative tasks, and people tasks, okay? And those are three completely different categories. Now, let me explain. By the way, creative, administrative, and people spell the word cap. So I put on my cap before I go into my day. All right, so creative tasks are like, for instance, writing the blogs that I write, doing articles, outlining a book chapter, even a script for a podcast or something like that. But it's stuff that I'm going to have to put my creative brain on, and I want to stay in that deep water for a while without coming up and interrupting it with a conversation with a person.
Absolutely. Okay?
Letter A is administrative tasks. Those are planning meetings for apprentices that I just did, a meeting with Frank Blake that I recently had. So those are just the administrative stuff that isn't very glitzy or glamorous, but all of us find ourselves having to do that, except for 1% of the American population. 99% of us have sort of administrative things that we just need to say, you know what? It's got to get done.
So true.
And I believe that should be bundled together when you're kind of in that vein of I'm in the administration mode of my thinking. Mm. The people tasks obviously are just that. It's meetings with people, webinars, video shoots, Zoom calls. It's the time where you completely shift gears, you get into people mode, and you know you're going to want to banter, you're going to want to volley in conversation, maybe laugh a little bit. When I'm writing, I'm not laughing, I'm thinking. But Andrew, when you and I get together, we inevitably are laughing together because we're in people mode. So
yeah.
I think that's one. Bundling is a key way to get more done, I think, in any given day.
I love this. You know, Tim, I actually remember people talking about these kinds of concepts up to 5 years ago. And I remember thinking, yeah, that sounds good, but I don't think that they live in the reality that I live in. You know, that's yeah, that's the message we tend to give ourselves. And I have just discovered that this is so true. And it's part of playing offense, not defense, like you talked about earlier. If you are going to get the most out of your time, you need to start bundling as an offensive strategy.
Yeah.
In order to give you the best return on your investment of time. And this goes for the leaders we're speaking to right now, but it also goes for those students that they're talking to as well. If you're working on a homework assignment, knock them all out together, you know, then switch to something else. And I think this is really good advice.
Well, Andrew, I think we need to concede there's some parts of our day, especially if we're young in our careers, or maybe we're a student, where we go, I don't have a choice. My teacher, my boss, my professor asked me to do it this time. You are going to have to do certain things when other people ask you to do them.
Absolutely.
But as much as you can, where you have a little bit of autonomy, bundling is your answer, I think.
I love it. Good. I love it. All right, let's do number three.
Number three, schedule your day the night before.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So this is something I know we've all thought about. Some of us do from time to time. But if you can make this a regular habit to schedule a day the night before, I think tomorrow actually starts the night before.
Mm.
So do this with your kids if it helps. Sit down before going to bed and plan the next day from beginning to dinner time. Okay. You may want to say after dinner time is veg time. You know, you can play video games or whatever. But I really find that in our home, for instance, we try to keep evenings free for family time and dinner time together. But I think the key here is to be sure and stay realistic, but schedule the projects you actually believe you can finish in a day. Now, Andrew, you know one of my greatest flaws is I'm over-optimistic with what I think I can get done in a day. So I have to be careful there because I'll be beating myself up at 8 o'clock at night when I didn't get but, you know, 16 things done and I wanted to get 25 things done.
Yeah.
And my wife goes, 16 is great, you know.
Yes.
So talk them over, I think, for support and accountability. In other words, some of the people in the family might go, you need to do more than two things, you know. But then accountability might be, oh, I believe you can do that. I'm going to hold you to it. So we would often leave a fun job toward the end of the day. I remember Jonathan and Bethany, our two kids, we would say, okay, if we get everything else done, this last thing, which is tons of fun, we would look forward to it. And maybe it was a trip to Dairy Queen or something like that, you know, where we could, except for the diabetic in the family, we
That's
could
right.
all enjoy the ice cream cone or the blizzard or whatever. So anyway, just eat the fish and spit out the bones, listeners, on this one. But I think scheduling the night before just sets you up to not wander at 7:30, 8 o'clock in the morning, wondering what in the world am I going to do today? You've already have accountability partner that's saying, I'll tell you what you can get done today.
I love that. I think this is all just about proactivity, you know, and this is one of the things that I've started to do. Even honestly, even just looking at the things that are on my plate for the next day, the evening before, just I wake up so much more ready to tackle things. And I'm in the right mindset and some of those things, there's no surprises in my day. It's just a much better way to go about it.
Andrew, I don't know, maybe this is a wrong term, but it's psyching ourselves up, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's psyching ourselves up for what's coming. I always do better when I feel a little bit prepared on who's that call going to be with, what's the topic, what's this, what's that. And you're absolutely right. We're ready for the day when we already know here are the four or five big things that are going to happen that day.
Love it.
Yep.
All right, let's do number four.
Number four, wear headphones and listen to content to prevent distraction. Now, this one isn't absolutely foolproof, but it is usually proven to be helpful, at least for me. My number one reason for getting distracted from getting things done is interruption. Number one reason I don't get things done. And I've found that wearing earplugs or headphones can reduce that. I'll listen to great music or podcasts, TEDx talks. I've got a series of podcasts that I listen to. My wife will listen to books or she'll listen to a Marco Polo video that her friend has sent her, you know, because they often are very, very long Marco Polos. But that's a whole nother podcast for another time.
Indeed,
but anyway,
it is.
You know, you and I both know when you've got these on, people can see you're sending a signal, I'm doing something. And then secondly, when that music's going or whatever, you're just able to stay in that lane and just move forward rather than sideways.
Yeah, I love this. I actually started a playlist years ago. I call it Writing Tracks, and it is for this exact purpose. And the way I determine whether or not a song fits in there is I'll play some music that I think is really good for writing. And if I get to the end of it and I didn't notice it at all, I know that was a really good track because it existed in the background. It kept me distracted, and I didn't even notice it was on. That's typically the sign for me that that's really good. But I love this advice. This is really
Excellent.
Good.
Cool.
Number five.
Start with a full emotional tank and plan brain breaks every 60 to 90 minutes. So everybody knows this. We've all read a book on it. We've all heard a TED Talk on this. But I just want to nudge you to actually do it. So we're much more apt to get a lot of things done in a day when we don't enter the day on a tank that's empty or half empty.
Yes.
So two of our habitude images speak to this need, the starving baker and emotional fuel. Now, in case you're listening to this podcast and you have no idea what a habitude is, habitudes are 9 courses that we developed where we teach timeless principles with the power of a picture. Habitudes are images that form leadership habits and attitudes. So let's talk for just a minute, Andrew. I may even have you kind of co-teach this, but the starving baker, I'll do the starving baker, you do emotional fuel.
Okay.
The starving baker is simply a scenario of a baker that's spending so much time baking bread for others, he actually forgets to eat and starves himself.
Yeah.
And the irony is there's food all around him, but he's so busy baking bread for someone else, he doesn't eat it himself. This is the number one occupational hazard of leaders and teachers, and really, for that matter, anybody that's serving somebody else. Teachers listening to this, you know this is a hazard. So what you got to do is say, just like I spend time getting someone else ready to learn a lesson plan or whatever it is I'm doing, I'm spending time filling my own mind. I'm feeding myself before I feed anybody else. Now, Andrew, take a second and talk about emotional fuel. That's another metaphor that I think rings true here.
Yeah, I love this one. Well, I think we all know the feeling. Even if you haven't been on behind the wheel of a car that does this, you've probably been in a car that ran out of gas. It's one of the worst feelings because there's nobody to blame but yourself, right? And here's what we have found. Just like a car runs on fuel and can run out of gas, human beings are exactly the same way. We run on fuel. Only the fuel that we run on is emotional fuel. We need our tank to be filled with emotions. And the only way to get that emotional fuel is to get it from other people. Each and every one of us have key relationships in our life, whether they're our peers, friends, mentors, people we look up to, literally anybody that could be in our relationship. We need those key relationships in our life in order to keep our tank full. If we want to keep running, we've got to make sure that we're not running on fumes. Yeah. And that's kind of what emotional fuel is all about.
Yeah, it's intentional relationships. So intellectually full, emotionally full, that's what we're talking about.
Yes.
So what I typically do is if before I get writing on any given day, like today, for instance, I read for 30 minutes just to get my brain moving and I was feeding myself, even though I was going to write on something very different than that particular topic, it just got me in the flow. I know some people, Andrew, that will have a phone call with a friend, like an accountability partner, and they just get energized by that intentional relationship.
Love
their it. Emotional tank is fuel. Again, it's not that that person said something you're actually going to do that day, but they energized you emotionally. I think this is one of the best ways to get stuff done during the day. So years ago at Growing Leaders, our organization, our team attended a training day with a neuroscientist who taught us that every 60 to 90 minutes, our brains need a break if we want them to function at full capacity. So whether it's take a walk or get some water to drink or shoot some hoops or play ping pong like in our office or talk to somebody else on a break, this doesn't prevent productivity. It actually accelerates it if you just take a little bit of time, get the cobwebs worked out of your brain, and then you go back at it.
I love it. I love it. This is actually, I think it's an even bigger hazard. It has been for me at least during this season of quarantine, because when you're at home and your office and your living space are the same thing, one of the biggest mistakes you can make is you just keep working. You don't ever take a break. You don't even think to take a break. There's not as many people around to distract you and all those kinds of things. And what I have found is I just need to be super intentional to walk away from whatever I'm doing and do something, you know, that feeds me or fuels me in order to make sure that I come back ready to take on what's left on my plate.
Yeah, it's counterintuitive. You actually stop working so you can get more work done. It's sharpening the axe before you chop down the next tree. That's what it's all about. So
love it. I love it. All right, so that was number five. Let's do number six.
Number six, do quick things first, then first things first. So I have believed, for me at least, this has worked for years and years and years and years. I find that I build momentum if I make a list of tasks that need to get done, then choose the first one that I can get done quickly and check it off the list. What I feel internally is momentum. Got that thing done in 12 minutes or whatever, you know. But now I go, okay, I'm cooking. Now, I've only done one thing, but I feel like I'm moving forward. And it might not even been, listen, it might not even have been the most important thing that day, but I just feel like the momentum moves me forward. It's like jogging for a little while and then picking up the speed is easier than starting from nothing and going fast right away. So it furnishes a feeling of success. I feel momentum. I believe it can. I can conquer bigger mountains that day. So this week it was writing two thank you notes. The week before I was planning a meeting. I did them 10 minutes and was raring to go for the bigger and longer tasks that came later. I just find, at least for me, that just helps me probably internally, emotionally, to really go after the next tasks that need to get done.
I love that. I love that. And I love the metaphor of quick things first, so knock out something really small, and then switch to first things first. So then you switch to your prioritization. And I think that's a really great way to go about your day.
Yeah.
Love it. All right, number seven.
Number seven, utilize the Pareto principle. Utilize the Pareto principle. So many of you know this principle, but let me give some backstory real quick. Vilfredo Pareto was an Italian economist who died about a century ago. Now, he developed a theory that we commonly call the 80-20 rule. So the Pareto principle is basically the 80-20 rule. And here's basically what it says in terms of time. With the right priorities in place, 20% of your effort will get you 80% of the results you're after. With the wrong priorities, approximately 80% of your effort will get you 20% of the desired results. So if you made a list of 10 things that needed to get done, if you prioritize them well, first of all, you'll realize not all activities are equally valuable, right?
So true.
Activity does not equal accomplishment.
Yes.
But you get the top two activities done. That doesn't mean you got everything done, but the top 20%, the top two, probably will get you most of the productivity or the fruit or the results you're really after. So in short, all tasks are not equally productive. And this is another one of our habitudes, Andrew, big rocks first. Put the big rocks in the container, and then the little rocks will somehow fit into the crevices because you put the big rocks in that container first. So with your to-do list in hand, always be sure you place important tasks toward the beginning of the day so you don't get to the end of the day, oh, darn it, I didn't get that really important thing done and it's 4:55 or whatever, you know. I just feel like that's often what we do because we're not as proactive as we need to be. The key
so
is, this key is, it's key to putting your mission in place and put the wheels in motion on getting to where you really, really say you want to go by the end of the day.
I love this. I actually use a to-do app called Todoist. And one of the things it allows me to do is I make my task list for the day, but it has three levels of prioritization, and I'm actually able to add prioritization to each task, and it auto sorts those and puts the most important things right at the top for me to knock out first. And I think that's such a great way. It's the quick things first, like you said, but then it's first things first. You've got to knock out your top priorities. And the 80-20 rule, the Pareto principle, is exactly the way to do it. Love it.
Absolutely.
All right, number eight.
Number eight, leave breadcrumbs for yourself.
Mm.
So here's my question, listeners. Have you ever been working on something and you get interrupted, which does happen, or you need to research to finish a task, you need to go dig deep on something in the middle of your task, and then you lose track of where you were when you left off? You go back to, oh, darn it, what was I doing? Or what was I just thinking? And you lose it. It happens all the time, at least to me. So I've learned to leave breadcrumbs for myself so I can pick right back up where I left off when I return to my original project. So an example might be, if I'm writing something, I'll start the next paragraph and scribble just an idea or two, not even a complete sentence. So I can pick right back up with that when I'm writing and actually complete the sentence. But I don't have to start over from first gear. I'm already still in third or fourth gear, and I can just, you know, pick it back up. I will minimize the docs on my computer like we all do, but that allows me to, oh yeah, those are the four things I'm working on right now. I'll scribble on notepads, put ticklers in my calendar. These are all just breadcrumbs to help you not have to go way, way, way back to the beginning when you have to start fresh on the next block of time.
I'm sure you, like me, Tim, learned this the hard way. I actually remember when we were working on the Generation Z Unfiltered book that I wrote probably four or five paragraphs of a chapter, and I didn't leave any notes for how I was going to complete the thought, and I ended up having to come back the next day and reread everything I had just written to feel like, where was I going with this,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah,
and I think we've all been in that scenario. So this is a great little tip. Leave a breadcrumb, write out a quick couple bullet points just so you know where to pick back up when you left. Love this idea.
Well, and Andrew, you and I would both admit, it's not that you can't get the old idea back, but you just lost time.
Exactly.
You know, trying to get it back, so...
Exactly. All right, let's do number nine.
Number nine, communicate your deep dives to those around you. Now, author Donald Miller taught me this one, and I've never forgotten. And Andrew, you and I have noticed our office, our different team members, will sometimes put little signs up in their office when they're doing a deep dive, quote unquote.
Yep.
So when you or your young people need a chunk of uninterrupted time, let others know ahead of time. Like in our office, I mentioned a minute ago, we began to put signs up on the door. In fact, some of them had little scuba divers.
Yep.
Remember the little picture, JT, little scuba diver with little bubbles coming up from his head? But they just put the words deep dive, and that let everybody know to wait. Don't interrupt them right now. They're on a deep dive. Nothing wrong with then going scuba diving and somebody somehow finds a way to contact you. You have to go all the way back up the surface. Oh, yeah, it was red or whatever, you know.
Yeah, then, yeah.
Now, where was I with those starfish or those whatever? So I think what we need to do is we're going to need to have honest conversations ahead of time and say to your brother or your children or whatever, I'm doing a deep dive. Give me 2 hours or give me 1 hour or maybe just 30 minutes. If I get 30 minutes, I'll come back up to the surface and we can talk, or you can interrupt me, and maybe they're going to need to make a note of what they need to talk about, which is a breadcrumb. But I think that's what we're going to need to do to make sure we get the really important stuff done that we need to get done.
Love it. There's several people in our office that are really good at this. And, you know, in this season that we're in now, we're having to put it on our calendar rather than on our door that we're doing a deep dive. But I think of one of my colleagues, Cody. That guy will block off time for him to knock out a task that he knows has to get done that day. And it's just a signal to everybody else. I'm diving deep. I'm knocking this thing out. You know, bother me tomorrow kind of situation. And I'm sure it's extremely helpful for him to knock those things out. So,
yep.
All right, let's do the last one. Number
one, 10. Last one. Come up with relevant rewards for each person. So I don't know what your temperament is. Maybe this will not help you, but for most people, I think it's helpful. I've done this one for years for myself and my children. When you have a daunting, maybe even intimidating task to do, identify a reward that you'd love to enjoy when you finish it. And then you make sure you hold each other accountable. You have your young people come up with an appropriate prize that they want, one that you want. For my wife, it's often ice cream or frozen custard or whatever. For me, it's popcorn, and it's not always edible, but something you really, really want. And you don't let anybody enjoy the reward until they're done. So I just feel like this is just an important one. It's short and sweet, but motivation often comes when you know something good is coming. If I get this done, the human spirit tends to jump in and go after it because they know the reward's going to be sweet.
Yeah. Keep an eye out. If you're working with young people or kids, keep an eye out for what they're spending time doing instead of doing what they should be doing, and turn that into a reward. I see you've got sidetracked on YouTube there.
Yeah.
I tell you what, if you knock this out in an hour, you can watch that YouTube video and nobody's going to be on you about it. It's going to be a reward instead of a distraction. And I love this idea of sort of reframing the things that we're doing. Awesome. Well, Tim, thank you so much for giving us this insight into how to better manage our time, but also how to help the young people that we're leading better manage their time too. You know, time management is one of those really important life skills that you and I know is important when you're 12 and 13 and 14, but is vitally important when you're stepping into adulthood. And there are far too many young people who are entering into their 20s and they haven't yet built this skill. And this is just one of those life skills that we are trying to build in young people. If you are interested in doing this, we want to provide you with a couple of tools that might be really helpful for you to do this. One of those is actually free. We designed a new free resource called Home Chats, and you can get it at growingleaders.com/homechats. And Home Chats are 8 conversations that can be had at home. They're experiential, they're fun, and guess what? One of them is all about time management. So we would love for you to check out that free resource. It's a fun way to get things done at home and to have important conversations in the midst of this COVID-19 pandemic that we all find ourselves in. The other resource I would point you to is Habitudes for Social and Emotional Learning. Time management is one of the SEL key skills, it's one of the things that we definitely cover in that curriculum. If you're interested in building social and emotional learning skills with the power of an image, I just want to suggest to you Habitudes for Social and Emotional Learning. You can find out all about that by going to our website. Go to growingleaders.com and click on Habitudes, and you'll see information about Habitudes for Social and Emotional Learning. So again, that's growingleaders.com/homechats, and then growingleaders.com, click on Habitudes, and you can find out more about Habitudes for Social and Emotional Learning. As always, if you would rate this podcast, that gets the word out about what we're doing here, and it's super, super helpful. We prefer 5 stars, but we want you to be honest in your rate, so please do that. If you would, follow us on social media. We love connecting with you there. We're at Growing Leaders Sanders and at Tim Elmore pretty much everywhere you are. I haven't gotten Tim on TikTok yet, but maybe one of these days. And then lastly, if you have ideas for us, things you want us to cover, people you want us to interview, shoot us an email. It's podcast@growingleaders.com. We love getting those emails from you. Well, Tim, thank you again for your wisdom and insight. Thank you guys for listening, and we'll see you next time.